tension, of course, increasing on the Korean Peninsula with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un appearing determined to assert his leadership by making threats. North Korea has been testing nuclear missiles, of course, and warning visitors now to leave South Korea. How big is the concern about this in Washington?
Well, this is a big concern, and what you have here is you have a country that loves to practice brinksmanship. They've done these types of things for a long time, but we knew the previous two leaders. We really don't know this leader, and there are some people who think that in order for him to assert his authority within that country, he needs to be really tough and really hard line. And it's a concern. You just don't know what kind of advice he's getting. You don't know how far he will go. And people here in Washington are watching it very closely, and I know that the State Department and the Department of Defense have both said things in the last few days that basically, you know, we're taking his saber rattling very serious.
The UN Global Arms Trade Treaty is also creating a bit of controversy. It's designed to regulate cross-border arms trade. Countries that opposed it include Iran, North Korea, and Syria, and apparently it's also opposed by a large portion of the U.S. Senate. Do you have concerns about it?
Well, I want to look at it. I haven't had a chance. You know, they just finalized this, a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember exactly when, and I think from a lot of people's perception here in the U.S., when you put the word UN and guns in the same sentence, people get a little nervous, and I think that's what's happened here. I'm not sure that the treaty has been fairly represented in the U.S., but again, I haven't had a chance to really look at the provisions and know exactly what it does, but my understanding is it's very clear that it will not infringe at all on anyone's Second Amendment rights here in the U.S. So I'll have to look at it and see, but at some point it'll come to the Senate because it is a treaty and we'll have to deal with it. I'm guessing we're talking about later this year.
Well, speaking of Second Amendment rights, there was a deal, of course, announced yesterday on background checks in the gun control legislation that's being proposed. Is this deal going to matter when it comes to trying to get this legislation passed?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I've already been pretty outspoken that I do not support the assault weapons ban that Senator Feinstein is pushing. I also don't support the Reid gun package, Harry Reid's gun package that he has been able to get out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I think all of this has some problems. But yesterday, you're right, breaking news, there was a compromise on the background checks. And this is one, this is an area that would, you know, close the gun show loophole, would basically put anyone who's in the business of selling weapons, pretty much put them on the same playing field as a store, as a brick-and-mortar store, in terms of, you know, having to do the background checks and make sure all that's done. I haven't had a chance to look at it. They are still, as far as I know, I'm not sure they've actually filed their bill yet. They've agreed in concept. Once I have a chance to look at the bill, I actually saw Senator Manchin this morning before the call, and I talked to him for a few minutes about it, and he promised me he would get it to me ASAP, but I don't even think they've actually drafted it. I mean, they're in the process of drafting it. It's not final yet.
Why is there opposition to simply requiring people to pass a background check before buying a gun?
You know, this is something that goes way back. I think the National Rifle Association is just philosophically opposed to that. And
they haven't always been opposed to it, though.
No, but I think right now they are. And I think that you also have other the NRA is not the only gun group. There's the Gun Owners of America and others. And, you know, these folks are out there really churning up opposition to anything, any legislation on guns. The truth is, on this kind of thing, I certainly am a Second Amendment guy, and I follow the Second Amendment, take that very, very seriously. But also, I think law enforcement has earned a seat at the table, and I want to hear from law enforcement on this. But like I said, before we can even do that, we need to know what the Manchin-Toomey bill says and what the provisions actually do. So once we get that, I'll start running my traps in Arkansas and see how people feel about it.
How do you feel about the NRA proposal to arm some teachers and school staff in their schools?
You know, I don't like that proposal. You know, quite honestly, I've always been a supporter of the COPS program, which what that does is that's the old Bill Clinton, 100,000 new police officers on the street, and a lot of those in Arkansas were school resource officers.
Right.
And the way that works is the federal government would pay the first 2 or 3 years, and then the city or county would have to pay the next 2 or 3 years, depending on how we did it that year. But nonetheless, That, I think that program is a good one. When I was Attorney General, I was a little nervous when I started until I got out in the schools and I realized the kids liked it, the parents like it, the school administrators like it, the teachers like it, and the police departments liked it. It kind of worked for everybody on different levels and different ways. But the reason I like that is you have a certified law enforcement officer who knows what he or she is doing and has relationship with the kids, and it just seems to be a win-win. Some of this other proposal about arming teachers, I just and even some volunteers in the school, that makes me a little nervous.
Well, you know, we still have school resource officers in our Jonesboro schools, most of them, and schools, like you said, used to get federal grants to help pay for the SROs, but now they have to foot the whole bill or not have them. Is this an area where we might look at reinvesting in?
I would hope so. I think the COPS program, no doubt, was a big success. Again, they weren't all for school resource officers, but a lot of the money went there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of community policing and other things. But I think it works. And again, I think that everybody is happy with that police officer in the school. It kind of meets a lot of purposes and fills a lot of needs, and it's kind of a good thing all the way around. So I've always been a supporter of the COPS program. I'm also a supporter of more mental health funding, things like that. And I've been consistent on that. I mean, with all due respect to some of my colleagues, they've voted to cut that, and suddenly now they say, oh, yeah, no, we need more mental health. Well, you know, put your money where your mouth is. If you're going to support that type of thing, let's actually fund it. And so I've been pretty consistent on that. And, you know, I think as we go through this year, we'll look at things like enhancing or building up the COPS program again. We'll look at things like doing more funding for mental health, things like mental health parity, you know, whatnot. So, you know, this will all be considered as we go through the year.
Well, we're also expecting developments on immigration reform. What do you see happening on this issue?
Well, you have 8 senators, 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans, who are working on immigration reform. I've been cheering them on. I said, look, guys, the only way to get this done is to do it in a bipartisan way. And, you know, I appreciate them doing it. I told them at the same time, I'm not sure I can vote for it because I don't know exactly what all of your provisions are. I'm going to have to see it before I can say I can support it. But the fact that they're working, I think, is a positive thing. They're working through some very difficult and thorny issues. But if you're going to solve this, you're going to have to do it in a bipartisan way. So, you know, I think obviously we need to do a better job of enforcing the law we have on the books. We need to strengthen our borders. But also, we have some just fundamental problems in our immigration system that need to be addressed. So I look forward. My guess is they're going to have this ready in the Senate sometime in the next couple of weeks. It'll go to the Judiciary Committee. There'll be amendments. There'll be all that in the committee, and then it'll come to the floor. So my guess is you're talking, you know, sometime in the summer before the Senate itself is actually working on this.
Now, one of the other hot-button issues that you've been feeling some pressure on is the opposition that you have expressed to same-sex marriage. You're one of only 3 Democrats in the Senate who's not gone over to support gay marriage. Why do you continue to hold that position?
You know, my position's been consistent. I've been in the Senate now for over 10 years, and it first came up in my 2002 race, so now over 10 years I've had the same position. I just oppose same-sex marriage. And, you know, I've been consistent on that. Now, we do have a lot of Democratic colleagues who've come out in favor of it, and now a handful of Republican colleagues as well. So, and, of course, that's going to the U.S. Supreme Court right now, and we'll just have to wait and see. And, again, I think we're talking probably the summer months, probably June, most people think, when the U.S. Supreme Court will come down with their decision. And we'll just have to see what they decide and see if there's any follow-up that'll have to be done this year. I mean, anytime you have a decision like that, there could be some legislative ramifications that flow from it, but maybe not. We just don't know what the court's going to decide.
Well, we know the president has presented his budget this week, and it's kind of unusual. He said this is not exactly the budget he wants, but rather what he sees as maybe a viable compromise. And the House and Senate have passed their respective budgets. What's going to happen with all this?
Well, this is a strange thing. First, I'm glad that the Senate passed the budget two, 3 weeks ago. Whenever we passed it, I'm glad we did it. It's the right thing to do. Should do it. The House has a budget. The two budgets are pretty far apart. Now we have a third budget, the president's budget. And he actually is late to the game. You know, both houses have already voted on budgets, so it's kind of odd. He's late from where he's supposed to have filed the budget. But he is. He's trying to offer this as kind of a common ground type thing. I don't really like where he goes with his budget. I think that, you know, you have some increased taxes, but it really doesn't do much at all, doesn't do enough, certainly, on deficit reduction. And we have to get a budget on the books that gets us more toward the balanced budget. We can't get a balanced budget in 1 year, but we have to have a bipartisan budget. And this is, you know, unfortunately, what you see right now is you see partisan budgets in Washington. We need bipartisan budgets. So, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get together and work on the bipartisan budget as we go. But, you know, right now the Senate has a budget, the House has a budget, the President has a budget. So, you know, a few months ago we didn't have any budgets. Now we have three of them. So hopefully, you know, at some point we'll be able to reconcile all this and put it all together.
Well, big story also in Arkansas that's made national news is, of course, this oil pipeline leak, the ExxonMobil pipeline in central Arkansas. It's led, you know, we're finding out more and more about this as the days go on. It's led many people to further question the risks from pipelines like the proposed Keystone XL pipeline, which you've expressed support for. Should we consider these risks more now that we've seen the mess literally in our backyards?
Well, we always knew that there were risks, and you have to remember this pipeline that had the problem down in Greenbrier. And by the way, I'm very sympathetic for those families who've been dislocated. My understanding is some are starting to trickle back in, depending on air quality, et cetera. So I'm glad that's happening. I talked to Exxon the other day. They are reimbursing them for everything, and they're going to do a lot of remediation there in that area to make sure it's back to the condition it was in before this ever happened. But you have to remember, this pipeline's about 60 years old. When they build a new pipeline, there's better technology. There's better monitoring. They build in more safety stops through the system. So it's better constructed, better engineered today, better materials. So, you know, certainly we consider something like this, but it's a little bit like, you know, I hate to say it, but you know that planes crash from time to time. You don't want to totally say that no one should be flying anymore. And so pipelines, they're mechanical. They are going to have problems. They go over great distances. They're exposed to weather. Accidents happen. We know that. But still, pipelines are by far the safest way to transport oil and gas. I mean, you can load this up in tanker cars and trains, and they have accidents. You can load it up in semi trucks, but you know, that's an expensive way to go. There's no doubt that a pipeline is the best way to do it. Plus, and one last thing you have to remember, this has been studied. You've got the State Department has done 4 favorable environmental reviews. They say there's no significant impact to the environment. I think they've been looking at this for 5 years now. So this has been studied. The Keystone XL pipeline has been studied.
Just less than a minute left. You've been stepping up your outreach efforts around the state. One effort you've started is Skyping with middle school and high school students.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And, you know, students are our future. I think it's a great opportunity for me to sit down and talk to them about the federal government, about current events, about, you know, issues, whatever they are that are important to them. So if anyone wants to, you know, sign up for my website, you can sign up just by going on my website. You can call us at our D.C. office at 202-224-2353, and they can walk you through on how you get signed up. We'd love to hear from you.
All right, we're out of time. I appreciate your time today, Senator.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Senator Mark Pryor joining us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KSU Jonesboro.